This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The main opposition Democratic Alliance challenged Ramaphosa's pledge to wipe out corruption after Zuma's nine-year run, which was riddled with corruption allegations.
That's VOA South Africa correspondent Anita Powell reporting on the response from South Africa's opposition to President Cyril Ramaphosa's State of the Nation address. Details next. Also, Zimbabweans turned out today to commemorate the life of the country's longtime opposition leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, ahead of his burial tomorrow. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, South Africa's opposition has harshly criticized new President Cyril Ramaphosa's first State of the Nation address, questioning whether the new president has a concrete plan to address the nation's many challenges. VOA's Anita Powell files from Johannesburg.
A day after taking office to replace the unpopular Jacob Zuma, President Cyril Ramaphosa's debut State of the Nation address on Friday outlined big ambitions and challenged South Africans to follow in the steps of their greatest leader.
Together, we are going to make history in our country. We have done it before. We have done it before, and we can do it again. Bonded by our common love for our country, our love for our people, resolute in our determination to overcome the challenges that lie ahead, and convinced that by working together we will build the fair and just, decent society to which Nelson Mandela dedicated his life.
Monday's parliament session offered the opposition an opportunity to criticize Ramaphosa's vision. The State of the Nation address is traditionally a roundup of almost every aspect of government work, and 40 speakers from the ruling African National Congress and the opposition debated the finer points for much longer than the original 90-minute speech. Ramaphosa's every position was dissected and questioned, from public safety to education to healthcare to the ANC's proposal to expropriate farmland without compensation. The main opposition Democratic Alliance challenged Ramaphosa's pledge to wipe out corruption after Zuma's nine-year run, which was riddled with corruption allegations. Critics of Zuma and the ANC have long maintained he did not act alone in allegedly squandering tens of millions of dollars in government funds. DA leader Musi Maimane challenged Ramaphosa to make good on his promises with concrete action.
But Mr. President, let me perhaps ask you by start removing ministers who have already shown themselves to be compromised. Show South Africa that you're really serious about fighting corruption in your party, and fire Batabile Dlamini, Faith Mutambi, Musebenzi Zwane, Melusi Gigaba, Des Van Rooyen, David Maslobo, Lynn Brown, and Mr. 7,000 rands per night, Bongani Bongo, out of your cabinet.
The opposition says Ramaphosa promised sweeping changes and more summits, conferences, and working groups than observers could count, but little in the way of specifics. That was not lost on the leader of the far-left economic freedom fighters, Julius Malema.
President, we are saying to you, you're doing all of this because you know that you'll be a president for 12 months. You are effectively saying to South Africa, there's nothing I can do in the next 12 months because I'll be looking for plans from commissions. And after 12 months, I will be gone.
The new president will have a chance to refute the criticisms on Tuesday. Ramaphosa has just more than a year to try to implement changes before next year's national polls. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Average Zimbabweans turned out today to commemorate the life of the country's longtime opposition leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, ahead of his burial expected tomorrow. Sebastian Mumfu reports from Harare.
Yeah. Those are thousands of supporters of the Movement for Democratic Change singing as the body of their late party leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, arrived at a square in Harare. They say the struggle will continue. One of them was 37-year-old Chaimani Mataka, who spoke of the effort to unseat the ruling ZANU-PF party.
I'm here because the struggle will never be the same again without Morgan Tsvangirai. And I so wish that if we unite as a party, we bring a united front, which must manage to remove ZANU-PF. We remove this tyranny government, which is now being led by Emmerson Mnangagwa.
Tsvangirai died in South Africa on February 14 after a two-year battle with colon cancer. The opposition has been hit by disunity as various members fight to head the MDC. Acting leader Nelson Chamisa told Mourners Monday that an MDC victory in the expected mid-year elections would be befitting tribute to Tsvangirai.
The only tribute we can give to the president is the tribute of a vote. Let's give somewhere the tribute of a vote.
He says, then we change the country. We can assure you of immediate positive changes and good times. We are not like ZANU-PF, which takes forever to bring positive changes to the country. The ZANU-PF party has dominated Zimbabwean politics since independence in 1980, with until recently former President Robert Mugabe at the helm. Current Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa took the helm in November after Mugabe was forced to resign under pressure from the military. Despite the current wrangling in the MDC, Chamisa is expected to be the one to lock horns with Mnangagwa in this year's polls. Tsvangirai was a charismatic, determined politician who faced off repeatedly with Mugabe and the ZANU-PF, eventually entering into a coalition government for several years after the violent disputed elections of 2008. On Sunday, Mnangagwa described the late opposition leader as a, quote, brave man, unquote. Zimbabwe's Air Force flew Tsvangirai's body to his rural home about 250 kilometers southeast of Harare ahead of the planned burial Tuesday. Kenyan opposition leader and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga is among those the Movement for Democratic Change said would be attending Tsvangirai's funeral. It is not clear what Tsvangirai's passing will mean for the party's fortunes, but many say a leadership struggle in the MDC would greatly enhance the ruling ZANU-PF's chances of winning again. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
In Kenya, each year 40,000 cases of cancer are diagnosed, along with nearly as many deaths. About 20,000 Kenyan children die each year from the illness, which often is diagnosed in its late stages. Healthcare specialists are working to provide widespread support to those stricken with the illness, including financial support and better diagnostic care. Rael Ombor reports from Nairobi.
Mordecai Odongo, a father of two, says he worked hard to educate his children. 15-year-old Craig Ododemba, his second child, has just made him proud by entering high school. In his second year, in 2016, he started having problems.
In April, when he was in school, so he was sick and off. He came back, he came home. I took him to the hospital. At one stage, he was diagnosed while in summer combat, he was suffering from pneumonia, different diseases like that.
It was only after 9 months and visiting several different hospitals that finally a doctor got the diagnosis right.
So when I took him for a biopsy, that's when we realized he was diagnosed. They found that he was suffering from cancer. We realized that he had cancer after a long time. He started sickling like in April, was sick on and off. Actually, we came to realize that he was suffering from cancer in December. So that's when he started the treatment.
Odongo says his first thought was his son would die. He did not tell his child what disease he was suffering from. After a series of counseling sessions, he finally told him and accepted his son's condition. Jobless at the time, Odemba says the National Hospital Insurance Fund footed 60% of the bills, but that the treatment was still very expensive. Like Odemba's family, many Kenyan families grapple with the cost of cancer care. A chemotherapy session costs about $140 at public facilities across the country. They are higher at private facilities.
The treatment was very expensive. During this test, they were very, very expensive tests. And even when I was now diagnosed with cancer, it was still very expensive. And then the diet also was a very complicated diet. It was very expensive anyway.
A cancer package from the government-backed National Hospital Insurance Fund provides patients with chemotherapy, radiotherapy, CT and MRI scans at subsidized costs. Despite this assistance, treatment is not affordable for many. The World Health Organization reports that many children in low-income and middle-income countries do not receive or complete care. And as a result, over 90% of childhood cancer deaths occur in low-resource settings. Mordecai says he took care of his son the best way that he could.
When he was undergoing through chemotherapy, it was like now he was worse than before. Because, you know, when you are doing chemo, it kills even the good cells. Very, very delicate situations. At one stage, he recovered. He went back to school, but he took 2 weeks in school. Then later on, I think Alinyashewa on his way, Wakicheza too, I think. Then he was affected now on pneumonia.
Crayford Odemba died in May 2017, 1.5 days after contracting pneumonia and 1.5 years after developing symptoms related to lymphoma. The World Health Organization reports that each year more than 200,000 children are diagnosed with cancer. If they are provided quality care, more than 80% of children can survive. Anne Koriri is a researcher at the Kenya Medical Research Institute. She has spent over 10 years researching cancer and other non-communicable diseases. Koriri is part of a team of professionals developing the first cancer registry in Kenya. It will give clear statistics on the country's cancer rates. So far, she says a lot is being revealed, including problems in diagnosing the disease.
We have very few pathologists in the counties who can be able to diagnose cancer. They have challenges in terms of infrastructure. You find a county that is catering for a big population of people, they do not even have a tissue processor machine, you know, to be able to process those tissues and check whether this is cancer or not. So these are the challenges I'm seeing where we do not have the capacity to really diagnose these cancers and be able to make informed decisions.
In Kenya, Parliament is seeking to enact legislation to promote e-health and telemedicine in the prevention and treatment of cancer. These technologies will enable cancer specialists, especially at Kenya's National Hospital, to extend their cancer expertise to remote areas. Rael Ombor, VOA News, Nairobi.
Air travelers in Asia, Europe, and North America enjoy many direct flights. African flyers, however, frequently have to get from point A to point B by going to an intermediate location, which can be as far away as Paris or Dubai. Now the African Union is working to make Africa's cities more accessible by air, as VOA senior analyst Jeffrey Young reports.
While other continents take direct air flights for granted, it's different in Africa, where getting from here to there may take many hours or send you all the way to Europe or the Middle East to get to your African destination. This inefficiency has impacted both business and tourism, and because of that, the African Union is taking action. At a recent meeting in Ethiopia, the AU's leader, Rwandan President Paul Kagame, announced a new initiative to make Africa more accessible by air.
Today, we will launch the single African air transport market. This is a major step forward for transportation.
These international agreements are common in Europe, North America, and Asia, but so far, only 23 of the African Union's member states have agreed to this initiative, known by its initials, SAATM. Air transport officials say this AU effort to open up Africa's airspace takes place while the industry group Airports Council International reports that African airports in 2017 experienced a 13.3% increase in arrivals compared to the previous reporting period. But the industry says that much of that growth came from outside travel to Africa rather than within the continent. Via Skype from Nairobi, an analyst at KIPRA, the Kenya Institute for Public Policy Research and Analysis, Helen Osiolo, says a major hindrance has been a lack of legal groundwork enabling a pact such as the SAATM.
Many countries had not yet put in place the structures, the legal, the regulatory framework in place to make sure that they are able to have this free, like a liberalized air market.
Kipra's Osiolo says that a major impediment to inter-African air travel is the protectionism countries frequently give to their state-owned airlines, putting up taxes and other means of discouraging competition, as well as airfares made far higher because of having to fly to a third point to reach a destination. AU Chairman Kagame used the Addis Ababa ribbon-cutting ceremony for the initiative to explain another reason for its importance, Africa's economic advancement.
To be able to form a single air transport market, which is very important for the overall development of our continent.
Kipra analyst Osiolo sets forth the reasons why the African Union's air agreement would be an economic boost with wide benefits.
There's a recent study that has been done and has shown that in terms of 12 African countries, if they participate on this new agreement, making sure that their skies are open and free, we will be able to create about 150 million to 300 million jobs. And this is very important for Africa.
The Kipra analyst says what's needed is commitment by the African states not yet party to the AU agreement, and that once the pact is in place, it may be as long as 5 years before the continent enjoys the better service and lower fares the pact's promoters promise will come. Jeffrey Young, VOA News.
22 past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Pope Francis today accepted the resignation of a controversial bishop in Nigeria. The decision comes 8 months after he had told priests in the diocese to accept Bishop Peter Okpolki or lose their jobs. Pope Benedict XVI appointed Okpolki bishop of the southern Nigerian diocese of Ayara in 2012, but protests immediately arose and Okpolki was never able to actually take up his duties at the diocese. Ayara is one of the most Roman Catholic regions in Nigeria. Priests and members of the faithful there opposed Okpolki's appointment because he was not from the Mbesi region surrounding the diocese. They said it was unfair that the diocese was not led by someone from their region. Britain's Export Finance Agency says it will add Nigeria's currency, the Naira, to its list of pre-approved currencies. The move will help provide financing for transactions with Nigerian businesses and denominated in the local currency. The agency says the Naira will become one of three West African currencies the United Kingdom's Export Finance Agency has approved for its program for funding transactions that promote trade with Britain. The British government says it will also provide up to 85% of funding for projects that have at least 20% British content. Okeona Chukwu is professor of economics and the director of business school at the University of Port Harcourt. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonier on the benefits of the deal and the implications for Nigeria's trade with Britain.
That's a policy statement, and we're hoping that that will be adequately implemented. The implication of that is that our exports will be paid in, you know, Naira. So which means that if they are buying anything from us, they are going to demand our currency to pay for it. And that will, in essence, actually boost the value of the Naira. But again, that also depends on so many factors. We also know that the terms of trade between we and Britain can never be equal because they are technologically advanced. You know that what we export mainly are primary products. And so the level of value addition in the economy is very low. So our productive capacity is very low. So what we'll be exporting mainly are primary products. Take, for instance, agricultural products. We're exporting palm oil is raw the way it is. Even our crude oil, you know, crude oil is the mainstay of Nigeria economy. We just dig out crude oil and sell without refining it. You know that that is the stage we are now, that we only export, you know, the crude, and then use the money we get from there to import, you know, the finished product from our side. You see, so there is no way the price of primary product will equate the price of the finished goods. In short, in the finished goods, we have added value. Basically, the policy is supposed to, you know, boost the value of the Naira because they would demand Naira to pay for our goods they are importing.
How might this benefit Nigeria's economy? I say this because UK officials say that they will provide up to 85% of funding for projects containing 20% British exports.
You know, I've read that, you know, saying that they're going to finance 80% of, you know, products containing, you know, British this. You see, they give you something, they take it away from one side. So it means that even if they are financing, that, you know, particular project they are financing must be tied to, you know, their own, you know, product. But no problem. What we are doing, we are growing, and we are less developed economy. We are trying to develop. So it means that we can depend or ride on, you know, some other countries that are developed to develop. And then gradually, if the right policies are put in place in Nigeria, as they are funding these projects and they are producing it, we can copy the technology and develop it here and then start exporting, you know, that same product that are purely, you know, like full 100% Nigerian, you know, content.
In what parts of the Nigerian economy might the British invest?
The manufacturing industry is key because if you transform, you know, products to a manufactured output, it means that you have added value. And that would create value that would generate employment in the system. So that is one industry that is key. Then two, the agricultural sector through agro-allied. You know, Nigeria will have vast arable land and we can grow different kinds of crops in this country. So if they can come in this area, you know, to develop our agriculture, not just producing the primary product, to also add value to them by transforming that, the agro-allied thing. That will also generate, you know, output that we can export, that will help, you know, the Nigerian economy. Then coming to the mainstay of the Nigerian economy, you and I know that before we were refining, and all of a sudden our refineries got grinded. One day they will tell us one story, another day they will tell us turn around maintenance, another day they will tell us that it's producing but not to full capacity. But the basic idea is that those refineries are dead. So if, you know, the British, you know, people can also come in that sector to ensure that we develop, you know, our refineries, particularly the smaller refineries around the coast.
That was Oke Onochukwu, professor of economics and the director of the business school at the University of Port Harcourt. He was speaking with reporter Mike Mbonier. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Patrick Deya, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, South Africa has a new president, Cyril Ramaphosa. He ascended to the top position after the ruling African National Congress ordered the embattled, scandal-plagued Jacob Zuma to step down as president. We will discuss the implications of the ANC's power shift on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.